Jake has an actual Mimo.
We're doing it big for Bjork tonight. Here we go.
Oh, wow. Cheers, bud.
Cheers. Clink.
Clink. You got some champs left over from Weekend Adventures?
Yeah, I just did, some Mimos here at the house, and
Nice.
even though I gave it a really good go to finish the whole bottle, I couldn't. I'm only one man, so
Yeah.
I thought I'll save it for the show. So here we are.
Beautiful. I love it. Oh, wow. Return to form.
I
We're
know.
back on track.
Yeah.
Oh, and speaking of, we should say welcome back, or welcome to even Sippin' Mimos.
Sipping Mimos. Welcome to the internet's premier, oftentimes but not limited to, citrus-based libation podcast, wherein my partner Elliot and I
Hi.
discuss 90s rock and electronica albums. But that's not to say we stick entirely to the decade of the 90s. We've been known to venture out.
Oh, we ventured, baby.
Oh
Last
yeah.
episode, we went to 2001.
Oh, and what an episode. Have you gone back to listen to any more Jimmy World?
Not only that, well, listeners will know that it hit me real hard. The Bleed American by Jimmy Eat World hit me pretty hard. I was at a karaoke birthday party the other night.
Did
So guess what I put in?
you do the middle?
I did the middle.
Oh my God. Did it bring down the house?
Nope, because I'm really bad at singing.
Oh.
And it was like kind of earlier in the night too. Like I hopped up on stage at like 8:20, and I was like, I was trying to do like a bit, but like, I'm really shy. I'm really shy. I don't know if I should do this. I gotta go. Hey, don't let yourself off yet. And then I like completely blanked as I saw like just dead stares from people in the bar. I'm like, oh, I some of you feel left out. I put that down on. Best, I was like losing it. I was like, oh, I just started laughing. I'm like, I'm sorry, guys, I don't know. But I was so ready to rock that shit out. But man, the stamina it takes for that, because those lyrics are pretty tight together, man. Like, you gotta
Yeah.
really. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba.
I'm sure you crushed it, dude.
No, I did not, but okay. Oh, but during the guitar solo, I did run into the audience and run around and like high five people and stuff. Like, here
Where
we
were you? Where were
go.
you doing karaoke?
It's my buddy Chambers' birthday, and then we went to Egos.
Chambers, happy belated.
Yeah, happy birthday, Chambers. He's a good friend of mine, and he's quite the film buff, man. He's like a connoisseur and a student of film. He really knows his shit. Oh, I went with him and some other friends, and we went and saw Sisu.
Oh, I saw you gave it a really high rating on Letterboxd. Tell me about this. I hear it's very Tarantino-esque.
It's John Wickian, I'd
Okay.
say that, because like I think they share some producers and maybe some stunt guys. This dude in Finland finds a bunch of gold, like a lot of gold, like ancestral life-changing amount of gold, and he has 500 plus miles from the nearest bank in Nazi-occupied Finland, and he's got to make it with his dog and his mule across this terrain, and these Nazis are after him the whole time, so he just lays waste to them. So it's very violent, and but like also like well, it's a lot of fun if you're into that sort of thing. I recommend it if you like that. Sure, if you like a Tarantino like Inglourious Basterds, or if you like those John Wick things, or shot beautifully. It's got these great chapter titles like Chapter One, The Gold, and then like so we're like ooh. Everyone's immediately intrigued, and then like by like chapter five, like he just goes, chapter five, kill them all. And the audience was cheering at like, yeah, let's go. So it's like a kind of like a revenge kind of, thing. Like all the murder is, kind of justified if in the narrative of the story. So you're just cheering from the hallway. It's a good watch if you need to get some energy out.
Awesome. So it's a period drama like World War II.
Yeah.
My mom actually went to see it and was telling me about it.
Oh, what'd your mom think of it?
She said it was awesome.
All right, right on. Cool. Yeah, I recommend it.
You know what hasn't been an awesome experience that I put myself through and I can't turn back now? I started watching the Paranormal Activity movies.
When did you start and how far in are you?
I feel like one of the more iconic stories from the Sip and Mimos is the morning I woke up and put on wild things, you know, just
that's some old school lore. true fans will know that Jake watched Wild Things in the morning once and I won't let it go, but I had let it go. I had forgotten about it. Now Jake brought it up again. Here we go.
Well, I actually saw Drop Dead Gorgeous recently for the first time too, starring Denise Richards and Kirstie Alley, Kirsten Dunst, Allison Janney.
Oh, wow. Some all-stars.
Like a mockumentary kind of deal. Very like Best in Show. It's very of the late 90s. So a lot of things didn't age really well. But a lot is really funny.
I don't think I've seen that one. Is it good?
It was hilarious. Pretty great. Kind of just realized how funny Kirstie Alley was.
Yeah, for sure.
So Friday, you know, I was checking email, having my coffee. I saw The Exorcist was on. And I thought, I haven't seen The Exorcist in a long time. It's 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock, sure, 9 a.m. Fine time to watch The Exorcist.
And so there I am watching The Exorcist, and I'm just like, oh, this is good. You know, I haven't seen this in a minute. It's good. So I got in a spooky mood, you know.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I realized that I'd only seen Paranormal Activity 2. So yeah, I just started. I'm on part 3 right now.
I remember me and like a friend of mine like tore through all those like over a week for fun because we were in the mood, and like we kind of think of like looking up ghost videos on YouTube and like trying to debunk them and stuff like that. And then we just, of course, you stumble onto Paranormal Activity stuff, and it's how do they make these movies watchable? Like they cost $42 to make because it's all webcams and like, you know, bed sheets moving around, but it's like, oh my god, it's like you're on the edge of your seat watching sheets move and pillows float around.
Well, what I realized, they get the biggest scares because they like it's like breadcrumbs. They like have the camera. It's like night one, and you just see like a little shadow or like a little bed sheet move. Okay, yep. That's it. And then it's night two. So night two, you're like staring hard at your TV looking for something.
And yeah, you're looking for it. Yeah.
And then bang, something jumps out, makes a loud noise. I have this like, I think I have this like running theory after watching the first three, where it's like, I think the men of the house are the real demons, are the real villains of the story.
I've been saying this for years.
So like in the first one, it's Mika.
I don't remember plot points or anything, but.
And he's with his like girlfriend. They just moved in, and she's just like, babe, I don't want to be filmed. He's like, no, babe, we got to catch this. Babe, come on, babe, it's fine. And the whole movie, she's like, Mika, I don't want to be filmed, you know. And then the second one, it's like, it's the husband, and he's doing the same thing, you know. And she's just like, so-and-so, I can't remember his name, you know, I don't want to be filmed, stop. And he's like, come on, no, we have to see what's up. No, come on.
Mm.
And the third movie is the exact same, but it's a flashback. I think the husbands and boyfriends of the Paranormal Activity verse are the real villains, not Toby. Ooh. Not Toby the demon.
Oh, the demon's name is Toby. It's been a while, but it's interesting though.
It's just something I picked up because like you just feel like, ugh, this guy. And then like in the second one, admittedly, it's not as like blatant, but like, you know, the dad has a camcorder and he's like, he's not taking it serious. And then spoiler alert, he ends up getting super killed.
Super killed.
But yeah, I mean, they're averaging like 1 star on my Letterboxd.
So you didn't even enjoy them that much.
I mean,
But you're gonna finish the whole series because you're a completionist.
Yeah, I'm very much a completionist. And right. I think they're kind of cool. They're kind of I wouldn't call them like cultural touchstones, but man, do you remember when that first one came out? Like it was like a phenomenon.
Yeah, it was a paranormal activity that we all did on that weekend. Yeah. Yeah, those were a big old deal. Cause like I think studios were like, oh, we could do this? Like it's pure profit. And kids like to go see that stuff. And kids are like adjusted to like the webcam culture and all this now. So it's like just goldmine. It's a better movie if it looks like shit, you know, like, yeah. So if there's like a story reason why your movie looks crappy and it costs you less and you cast no name actors and stuff like that. I mean, it's just, you're just raking in cash, man.
Yes. Yeah, it's that Blair Witch effect, you know?
Yes, absolutely. It's absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Man, goddamn Blair Witch. That changed the world, didn't it?
It did. I remember it came out and I was still playing like Little League, and like talk about lore. I remember like buddies coming to practice and being like, oh, I heard that people were throwing up at Blair Witch Project because it was so scary. And you know, you look back, you know, 20 plus years later and it's like, oh, they're probably just sick from like being motion sickness, you know, having motion sickness.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know if anyone was actually throwing up, but if you did, I hope you are better.
Blair Witch is one of those movies that works better, and I would submit that the paranormal activity movies probably work better too, like on a VHS on a tiny little shitty TV, because it makes it a little more real and shit.
Yeah,
that's fun.
Yeah, it's neat, and so. I was kind of in a spooky mood, and you could only watch The Shining so many times. So I'd try something else.
Sure. Right on. Hey, did you hear rumors about speaking of casting, there's a rumor going around that a certain friend of the show might have a big old role in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, of which we talk about a lot.
I heard about this, and I'm frankly a little shocked and kind of hurt that he hasn't reached out to us to tell us.
He's upstairs right now. He hasn't told me shit.
I forgot you're rooming with Adam Driver. I forget this.
I forget if it's canon or not. I think I'm still in Safani Manor, but Adam's still a roommate. He's Summers here. I don't know. like, you didn't tell me this. Adam Driver apparently might be Reed Richards in Fantastic Four.
Oh,
you know, I mean, this is all, you know, it's not confirmed until we see a trailer, blah blah blah. But I'm on board.
I'm on board. I would. Uh-oh. I think he would.
Ooh,
make.
You hesitate.
I think he would make an even better Doctor Doom.
He would crush his Doom, but he's already had the Kylo helmet.
That's
character. That would be his Doom. We've already seen it.
Yeah, that's so.
That's
true.
The problem. That's the problem. I mean, and like, you just say, "Oh, Kylo Ren is Doom." That would be fucking sick. But we've already gotten it, so I think he's in trouble there. So I would love that.
Because he could play that like smarmy, like arrogant, you know, like it. Adam Driver could, you know, peel an orange, you know, on a Friday evening, and I would think it's the best thing ever. But I think he would be great. But you know, I haven't really seen him play like a Reed Richards type, kind of like almost like clean cut, like nerdy. I nothing's coming to mind
in roles of like that Adam Driver has played. I mean, I immediately thought of Logan Lucky.
Oh yeah.
So like he's like, you know, like a veteran, soft spoken, missing an arm, but whip goddamn smart, but doesn't need to say it. I don't know. So maybe that kind of vibe, but like he's gotta be chatty because we need him to talk and stuff. I don't know. He's kind of the lead. I think they're going for Reed is gonna be the lead of this one. Did you hear the weird rumor about who's gonna play the Thing?
No.
Mila Kunis. That's a wild rumor that's going around, but it might be really not true at all.
It might be real BS.
Yeah. I don't know how fans would take that, but it's an odd choice.
Yeah.
Oh, and then Margot Robbie as Invisible Woman.
Love that.
I'm on board.
Because I'm just thinking of Mila Kunis in like Michael Chiklis's thing costume.
Yeah, I'm sure she put the clay on and all that.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It'd be a reimagining of the character, and the thing would be female, and she would mocap it or whatever. And they would put some voice thing on her, and she would never be on set, and no one would ever meet her. And I don't know.
Man,
but,
can you imagine?
But
what a dream.
It'd be a move. It'd be a move. Yeah, it's weird.
It's weird. Yeah, it's.
That's the rumor again. Like, you don't know.
I would think that'd be wild to see Adam Driver, Margot Robbie, and Mila Kunis and Jake Drumgoole as the Fantastic Four. That'd be so crazy. Like, I would love
that. That would be crazy. That's my fan casting.
Speaking of the thing, one of the things I always ask you is, you know, have you seen, heard, tasted, smelt in since the last time we talked? I actually saw something really cool. Check this out. Okay. I know this is an audio podcast, so I will explain what we're doing.
All right, and I'll try to describe with commentary. Jake is reaching behind his back.
So, another movie I watched a couple times recently is John Carpenter's The Thing. Talking about The Thing,
absolute and, classic.
Waxwork Records out of New Orleans. They repressed a special edition of the soundtrack.
Nice.
And check this thing out. Okay, so you see it.
All right. Oh, no way. Okay, Jake's holding this thing up, and it has, like, this wild gatefold two-piece cover with a little zigzag on it, kind of mimicking the things, like, maw when it opens into the guy's
CPR
chest cavity.
Yeah.
It's insane. Oh, that's so cool.
Wow. That's rad. Yeah, I'm obsessed with this thing. So I picked this up recently. Really excited. Major shout out to Waxwork Records. It's a beautiful piece.
Sponsor us,
please. You know, and I was watching The Thing and I was thinking, you know, I haven't looked, where is Antarctica? You know, like where is this? You know, like I mean, I'll admit I haven't looked at a globe in a long time. I had to remind myself where it was. So I took out my globe that I have, my bedside table.
Okay, sure.
And I gave it a spin, and there it was, Antarctica. I gave it a good spin, you know, on my finger.
After you gave the Thing soundtrack a spin.
Yeah, yes. And, you know, I looked at Antarctica, and then it's interesting, kind of directly, you know, not above, but on the other side of the world. And if there's any geologists out there, geographers, I think it's apologize.
A pole.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, so nearby, maybe?
Yeah. You know, I saw another country.
Did you really?
I did. And beautiful. Beautiful country. And I did a little research, and turns out a certain artist is from this country.
What?
I think
Santa Claus?
It's a country. To quote one of my favorite 90s sports movies, The Mighty Ducks 2. Iceland is very nice, and Greenland is full of ice. But we're talking about Iceland today. The artist we're talking about,
yep,
is the one and only Bjork. You ready?
I'm ready.
Let's do it. Strap in. Here we go.
Searching.
So this week, Elliot brought to the podcast an artist I just talked about, just mentioned, Bjork, who is, I feel, so much more than a musician. She's a force of nature, just so much. And yeah. I know so little. Elliot, tell me about 1997's Homogenic.
Yeah, Bjork is a bit more than just a musician. She's an artist with a capital A. Also, Jake, I have news for you. I hope you're sitting down. I hope you swallowed that swig of Mimo, because it's pronounced Bjork.
Bjork.
Yeah.
Oh.
She just doesn't correct people.
Oh. Bjork. Bjork.
Bjork.
Bjork.
Bjork.
Okay. I will honor that for the
sake of not annoying everyone that's listening. We can call her Bjork. It's fine. Because that seems to be what people call her. But when she introduces herself to people, she says, "Hello, my name is Bjork." And maybe it's just her accent on that. But she is an artist, all caps even. Like, I feel like she just happens to make audio pieces. So we go to Iceland. Do you know any Icelandic bands or music or anything like that?
So the big one, Sigur Rós.
Sigur Rós.
Which
it's actually pronounced. No, I'm just joking.
that one, I probably, you know.
I call it Sigur Rós, but it's probably wrong too. I don't know.
So they're the big one.
Huge fan of Sigur Rós over here. Huge fan. Big ol' fan.
I've dipped my toe into the waters, but I love what I've heard. I'm trying to think. I know Iceland. I talked about Mighty Ducks too. Iceland earlier. It's like Iceland has always kind of like popped up on my pop culture radar, but I unfortunately haven't had the chance to like really dive in. One of my favorite scenes in any movie takes place in Iceland. Let's see if you can get it. Okay, I'll give you a hint. David Bowie, Kristen Wiig, Ben what? Stiller.
What?
An open mic.
What?
Remember that scene in Walter Mitty?
Oh, no.
He goes to Iceland. Okay. And he gets a ride on a helicopter out onto like a fishing boat, because that's where Sean Penn is, and he's in Iceland, and it's this beautiful scene where Kristen Wiig is singing a David Bowie song.
How about that?
I love it. And
how would you describe the landscape?
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Green. Just stunning, I would say.
How would you describe the music of Sigur Rós and Bjork?
Oh my gosh. Well, it's so interesting you asked that. Where Sigur Rós is just lush and you know, and just melody on melody. It's just rotten with just like just sweetness.
Yes. Dramatic.
Dramatic. Oh, that's like all my notes.
Yeah, just dramatic. Yeah.
This album, Homogenic, and this is, I said it last time, this is the first Bjork album I ever listened to. It's
for the show? For the show?
Uh-huh. First ever in my like life.
Oh boy.
It's very, very cinematic, but this album was I found it at times very avant-garde, I would say.
Yes.
It was at times minimalist. It was at times, I don't know if maximalist. It was had like elements of like Dadaism. You know, it was.
Yeah, it's a lot of art history 101 buzzwords.
Yeah, I. no, I took art right. history. I made an A.
Hey, good for you.
No, this was an incredible listen.
I don't think
I answered your question, but I hope I got there.
No, I got what you're saying. I was just trying to make the comparison of the Icelandic landscape to the music of these musicians that seem to come out of there.
Right, I can see that.
There's something going on there maybe you're closer to the poles, so like you're more magnetized or some nonsense, and like your synapses are firing in a different way. Bjork was like found when she was a kid. She was like discovered when she was like a little kid and like singing, and she like took to instruments. She was a child prodigy. She had a record out when she was 11. It was like a bunch of like weird covers. She doesn't consider it in her discography, but I want to find that record. I think she like sings a Beatles tune or something like that. Like, are you out of your mind? I want to hear that. She ends up like moving through the scene with her insane voice in the Icelandic like pop and punk and rock and music scene.
She was in like a punk band, right? Was it like the Sugar Cubes or something like that?
She ends up in the Sugar Cubes. Are you familiar with the Sugar Cubes?
I'm not. I just actually, it's so weird. Like a week ago, I think because we're always being listened to, we're like, okay, oh, we're doing beer. And then on my Instagram, it was like a photo of her playing in England with the Sugar Cubes, and she's like 19, something crazy young.
She was deeply young, yeah. She ends up in this band with like it's kind of like a super group. I think like all the top like leads and instrumental and members of different Icelandic like pop punk stuff in Iceland acquired Bjork, or like, you know, coaxed her into the band, and she was in the Sugar Cubes. Their track Birthday is really great, but this is like, it's like post-punk, like Icelandic breakfast club stuff. It's very, you know, like very fun, and like their album was like dropped in like 88. It was like, it's real fun, and like but like you're listening to this like cool like kind of post-punk like we'll be together rocket, like, but it's Bjork, so it's like yeah, like she's like doing this these insane vocal like gymnastics over it, and like you realize pretty quick, oh, this girl's gonna go solo. So she does. I think she's still friends with all of them and all that, her first band and all this. So she drops Debut. It's not just a clever name. And like skyrockets. Human Behavior is on there. She becomes like this kind of ethereal being, rising star kind of thing. She drops Post. That's her second album. That's the one with Army of Me on there. It's very cool. It's Oh So Quiet, which is like a musical number. It's fucking far out. She starts just cranking this stuff out, and then we get to 1987. She is now like kind of into, she leaves like some producers behind that she's worked with a few times, because she has now like gotten into the Manchester and trip hop sound that we talk about a lot. She like in fact may or may not have like had relationships with Tricky, who we talked about before, or Goldie, who we've talked about before. She produces stuff. She talks to the Massive Attack crew and all this, and she's like into that world, and she drops Homogenic in 97, amidst a year that we've talked about before of just electronic music is taking over the world, and she just had to. She just had to put her shit in there. This is not a dance album. This is not house, you know, techno, drum and bass, whatever. This is a, like, as Jake said before, avant-garde kind of piece. Like, she chose the name Homogenic for the album as a piece because she wanted to be kind of homogenized. Every song is the same flavor. She always talks about her music in a weird way. She says it's like volcanic, you know, stuff like that. She says she's weird. She's super, super weird. But we're all better for it because this shit is wild. Jake, what did you think?
Oh, it was crazy. It was, like I said earlier, it was like, at times it was just like her, like, you know, doing, laying vocals down over like a single synth, and then the next one it had like an orchestra on it, full-blown strings.
Yep.
I noticed some themes throughout, like in a couple songs. Even one song is actually named Unravel, but on Yoga, and I apologize if I mispronounce, she talks about unraveling you know, and so I noticed some like some
So the little cross like lyrics are shared between tunes.
Yeah,
love that. I kind of love that.
Oh man, this is crazy. What is she using to create the sounds on this record?
Fuck me, I don't know. There's one thing to be said. She works with plenty of producers, but she is doing a lot of this herself. She is a gearhead. She collects a lot of shit. There's a great video on YouTube, if you can find it, of her taking apart a TV and putting it back together. She's like, I like to understand how my TV works. She's fucking crazy. And she like really likes electronics. And like I sent you a video like earlier today on Instagram. Or like,
yeah,
where she's like, people think electronic music doesn't have soul. Well, that's because they forgot to put it into the music. And she's been obsessed with gear and electronics and all this. She's a big old synth head. And so God only knows what she's done with this. She's worked with producers like Matmos, which is a duo of guys that like record ice breaking or liposuction surgeries and make weird. I know Jake's face. I know.
Ow.
I know. I'll send you a link, bro. but like their whole thing is like, let's try to record the weirdest shit that we can and make like beats out of it. And that's what she does. Like, we don't know where a lot of this comes from. Some of this stuff on Homogenic, like, okay, there's some like 808s here. I know what that snare is from. Or I know what that is, and like, oh, this is clearly a, you know, string quartet and all this, but that she's doing a lot of this herself. She is not a pop star like rolling in and singing over a track. She is making this stuff and like working with people to make it, you know, as loud as it needs to be for the album. She artist with a capital A, artist.
So I had a couple of standout tracks.
Yes.
One of my favorites was Bachelorette. Reminds me of a James Bond song. You said the word earlier, cinematic. This song, my gosh, like I could just close my eyes and picture Pierce Brosnan, you know, saving the day, you know, in a 007 movie.
We never got a Bjork Bond theme.
I think she would, and I probably honestly still could crush it.
I wonder if she would even be interested in that, but I want to hear it.
Yeah.
it'd be too weird. Instead of guns, can 007 shoot clouds? Sound weird, you know?
my favorite track on this album was Alarm Call.
Okay.
I'm curious
about your favorites.
The vocals really stood out to me, and it's probably the most melodic on the album too. I love the synth work on this one.
Is full of love, dude. All is full of love.
I don't know. That's like her when it's cold, I would like to die. You know, which.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
I was going back to that song while listening to that. It made me think about Moby.
Well, it's like the closer. She said it was like, she said she wanted it at the end, like, because especially after like the darkness of Pluto, I think the track is before it.
Okay.
She wanted it to be like the sun coming up after a rough night, but it's still all in like one piece, you know? And like, so you're rejuvenated and like, here we go again kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, I think the piece is breathtaking.
Pluto actually was another favorite of mine. It reminded me of like Jilted Generation Prodigy,
you know. Ooh, like love,
very hard, very sharp, intense. But no, this was I don't know why. What is your first experience with Bjork?
She's always been on the peripheral, yeah, and like and especially like. And a lot of preparations for this show, like looking at lists and stuff, like, what am I missing? Like, I'll, you know, if you Google, like, notable electronica albums from the 90s, because I'm like, yeah, I've forgotten a few. Hear me, like, come on. She tops every list. So she is just in this electronica world, but I was so into the dance thing, I kind of missed out on Bjork a bit. Yeah. I gave my sister for Christmas 1 year a copy of Selma, which is the vocals from the movie Dancer in the Dark. Are you aware of this film?
Dancer in the Dark? No, I'm not.
Don't worry about it. Don't add it to your list. It's incredible, but it is like gut-wrenchingly sad. Bjork stars in it. It is her only like feature role as an actress, or actor, I should say.
Oh, is it directed by Lars von Trier?
Lars von Trier.
Say no more.
Who apparently was not great on set with her, and so fuck all that. The movie, which I have seen, is devastating. But there's just, like, some beautiful moments in it, and she's incredible. And I think she won like best actress at Cannes or something like that. So when she wore the swan dress, remember the swan thing? Remember that?
See, that's.
That's the Bjork, you know.
Yeah, that's like my introduction to this artist.
Yeah, that was a thing when she wore the Bjork. When Bjork wore the swan. Bjork fans that are listening right now, Dancing in the Dark, you know, it's required viewing for a hardcore Bjork fan. But tread lightly and take breaks. You know, it's like watching Requiem or something, like Requiem for a Dream.
Oh man,
it's just like, so just be very careful. It's so heartbreaking, so deeply heartbreaking, but also astonishing, because like she can act too. Yeah. Like, oh my god. So anyways, my relationship with Bjork, I didn't really have one. I knew she was on the peripheral of the electronica world, but she wasn't making like dance tunes. She wasn't making house or techno, and like I wasn't like collecting her records or anything. I've got a few of them here. I would hear remixes of her, yoga or whatever you want to call it. Like, I knew it as State of Emergency, and there's like a bunch of cool remixes of that one. But like nothing I would, that I have played out, because it's so ethereal and weird and wild and all that. Like, you know, and I was trying to like maintain tempos when she was like flying across my plate. I am ill prepared to like speak to her as an artist, but I do hold her in the utmost respect, and I think it's really awesome stuff. After these albums, once we get into the aughts, like she gets weirder and weirder. There's an album with like there's a bunch of great tunes, but then like she'll put out an album that's like all the songs are apps, and the songs change by where the poles are in the earth, speaking of the North Pole. Like, she's very like geographically like in sync and all this, so she just has all these wild ideas. She's a fine artist. When I was in art school, like I was an illustrator, like, you draw things that people ask you to draw, like, got it. But the fine artists, we draw and paint and create things that you people haven't even couldn't even think of. And like, okay, well, fair enough. And that's what she's kind of doing. It's very, you know, avant-garde, as I said, and like very art for art's sake. She's not worried about verse, chorus, you know, verse. Like, she's not worried about pop sensibilities. She's just making this stuff and these pieces. And I think it's kind of incredible. And her seemingly like global appeal has like made her like one of the biggest, I don't know, one of the biggest stars in the world.
Absolutely. She's instantly recognizable, you know, like, you know,
she's got a look too. Yeah.
You know, like in that, you know, from the elaborate, you know, the makeup and the like the costumes, and you know, like, you just like even as someone who is not, you know, or was not, you know, really versed in the world of Bjork, I could go into a record store and the albums don't have, it's just art, you know, it's just her.
These first three albums are decidedly portraits of her. Yeah. but just like her weird transmogrification, you know, like it's pretty wild.
Which is the iconic one where it's like it's almost like a black and white picture.
Well, debut is her going like
debut. That's it.
It's like the kind of the black and white, like, well, I am Björk. I am wearing a sweater. I have made this album for you and for the skies. What? This album was meant to be played on spoons. I don't know. She's weird. She's weird, dude.
But I'm saying, like, she's just like instantly, like I said, I just look up. I'm like, oh, you know, they re-released a Björk album, or Björk put out a new album. She just,
yeah.
I can't think of anyone else who's just so instantly, like, you know, just without anything on the cover. I mean, she's, and I think that's the first time I've ever actually, like, maybe the first time I've ever actually, you know, experienced that. It's like, I didn't know any of her music, but I know her, you know?
She's recognizable, and I don't think you could listen to a Björk song and not think it's her. Like, yeah,
absolutely.
Like she is noticeable as a person because she has quite a presence, and her vocals are undeniable, and they're not like anyone else. So I think that's quite a feat. Like, it's a weird diamond in the rough, diamond in the North Pole situation.
Yeah.
in the snow? How do you find a diamond in the snow, dude? We found it with Björk, I think. And I think she is an artist to follow and to respect.
Absolutely. I checked to see when OK Computer came out, because that's the one, you know, where Radiohead started getting really experimental. And it was weird, like, listening to Homogenic, I was just like, oh, this sounds like stuff that Radiohead does, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, Johnny Greenwood manipulating the switches on the, you know, with, I don't know what they're called, the oscillators, you know, all kinds of like different things.
That's fine. That works.
I saw Radiohead at ACL a couple years ago, and it sounded like what Homogenic was doing, you know, like those like wild synths. I wish I was around in 97, but was not aware of what was going on. I wish I could go back and be a music fan at this time, because, gosh, what an exciting period to be a fan of pop music, of rock music, electronica. It just blows my mind that these albums came out in the same year.
Tom and Johnny of Radiohead are big fans of Björk. Tom has collaborated with her on Dancer in the Dark, even. Before we close, I should probably mention that I've met Björk.
What? So you have some insight when you're, because the accent you're doing, it's like, it sounds quite like her, you know, and so you've heard her in person. Tell the story.
There's not much of a story. I didn't meet her. I tell the story as I danced with Björk once, but a more accurate story is that I saw Björk once while dancing. But it's better if I say I dance with Björk. So I was at a Mode Selector show. This is a German techno duo. And they were playing in the East Coast city I used to live in. And and me and my friends were having a good old time. We're dancing. And like Mode Selector is like spraying champagne, speaking of. They're spraying Mimos. They should have a show called Spraying Mimos. they're spraying champagne at the crowd and all that. So I'm like losing my mind. This is great. Wow, woo! And then this ethereal being just walks by, seemingly hovering over everyone. And I look, and it is Björk. Now, a lot of listeners are going to say, how do you know it was Björk, Elliot? I bet it was just some lady that looks like the craziest person in the world and like the most recognizable person ever. And I would say, it was absolutely Björk. She's a fan of Mode Selector. She was in New York to see the show. She was on the dance floor. And she walked right by me. I made eye contact with her. I smiled. She smiled back. That was our interaction. I interacted with Björk. And I was dancing. She was dancing a little bit too. And then I made her scrambled eggs in the morning. That's all I ever heard of her. I just had to get that out. I will stand by it. If anyone can prove to me that she wasn't at the Mode Selector show in Brooklyn in 2010 or whatever, or 2009 or whatever it was, then I'll admit it. But it was York was at that show, and we crossed paths.
Wow, that's pretty awesome. That's.
I mean, it's not a great story, but it's absolutely Bjork.
Well, you had a run in with like a global superstar. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh, and my sisters recently went and saw her in San Francisco, like recently, and like her tours are just like you're basically going to Mars at these shows, man. It sounds like so much fun. Oh my God, I would die to see Bjork. Would you want to see Bjork live?
Yeah, I think that it would be an experience. It'd be something you have to
see. It certainly would be an experience, yeah.
But yeah, thanks for giving me the opportunity to listen to this, you know, this brilliant, you know, this brilliant artist. I don't think I would have, sadly, I don't think I would have really dived in as much as I did for the show, but I'm glad I did.
Do you think it's an artist you might return to?
I think you
could be honest. You could be honest.
It's almost like a curiosity, if that makes sense. Like
a curio.
It's like I've never heard anything like this. You know,
When would you play Bjork? Like if you had friends over or something like that. I love the game of like what time of day would you play this stuff? I think if everyone's like shrooming,
yeah,
at 3 a.m, that's probably the best way to do it. If you want an ambiance that like kind of means something, I think that's kind of where you drop it.
I would put Bjork up there with like the Mars of Volta.
Oh,
you know,
interesting, interesting comparison.
Vocally wise, the progressive, absolutely. And Mars Volta, they're a group that
I'm a fan of Mars Volta. By the way,
love the Mars of Volta. Oh, and Mars Volta isn't a band that like you know necessarily just like. I'm gonna put on some Mars Volta. I'm just gonna chill. I don't know.
It's like the experience of it all.
Yeah, I would say an experience. I'd like to listen to this record with a good pair of headphones.
Yeah.
I'm like a nice 180 gram vinyl. Mm.
You wanna listen to Bjork like when you're like laying in a hammock on a rainy day.
Yeah.
Or like playing chess with a silent partner. Something like that.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Let's try to find a place for these things.
it's a right time and a right place type of sound, you know, and when it is that right time and it is the right place, it's explosive. Many people don't realize what an enormous impact their physical surroundings have on their mental well-being. Being surrounded by a home that feels like you and brings beauty and inspiration into your life gives you a feeling of calm and appreciation of the beauty in the world. You fill your home up with furnishings and items one way or another. Why not make them wonderful and a reflection of yourself? Joyce at Joyce Marie Interiors is committed to bringing beauty and elegance into the world one room at a time. Let her help you transform yours. Because if you could do it yourself, you would. Visit joycemarieinteriors.com for more information and tell her Jake and Elliot sent you. Well, let me ask you this question here.
Okay.
You know where Iceland is, right? I painted you a really good picture of the globe earlier.
I think it's pretty close to like where the elves make all the toys.
Right. Exactly. So where would you? And you know where California is, right?
Roughly.
Right. Okay. So the question I pose to you is. Would you say California is so far away from Iceland?
I would say so.
All right. Well, strap in because we're going to California with Social Distortion. Elliot,
what?
You ready?
I am.
Let's do it.
Here
we go! So we are back with Social Distortion's 1990 self-titled album.
90 with a bullet.
Yeah.
With a bullet. Very 90.
So I'm glad we picked these albums. And we just, that's why I love doing this show, because so often we pick these albums without even knowing. They just kind of like really pair well together.
They somehow do. It always happens.
Where Homogenic is, it's avant-garde, it's cinematic. Not the same that Social Distortion is not cinematic in its own way. We'll get there. This album is very much meat and potatoes, country rock, and punk all the way.
Also, both of our vocalists that we've chose have lost their shit and beaten the hell out of someone.
Yeah. So you read a little about Mr. Mike Ness.
I looked into it.
Oh, Mike Ness. All right. So,
Tell me everything.
My album this week is, like I said, Social Distortion. All right. So, this album was released March 27th, 1990. I'm bad at math, so I'm not even going to try and embarrass myself. I've done that before. And this is one that... This is one from a band that I absolutely adore. Social Distortion from the Orange County area of California. Orange County, you might remember, also produced a previous episode, The Offspring. So I don't know what they're putting in the water, but I want to get me a drink of that.
Angst.
Yeah. So Social D started off as a more of a straightforward punk band, hardcore band, founded by Mike Ness in high school after hearing the Sex Pistols.
Founded that adds up.
The late 70s, which is so crazy to me. That, put out a couple albums. They put out, pull out the discography, Mommy's Little Monster, before disbanding, because Mike Ness... While I think he's an incredibly gifted songwriter and wrote some of the greatest, cowpunk, punk rock songs this side of, 75, has had his struggles, with drugs and other things, unfortunately. As we always like to say on Sip and Mimos, if you are going through something involving this same thing, please seek help. Reach out.
Wow, he said reach out. I said, no. Beautiful.
There are people who love you and people care about you and want to see you do better. So I always like to preface that when talking about these matters. But this is an album that came after, Mike Ness, came out of rehab. And I think a lot of the songs on this record really reflect that. This is a record where the subject matter is looking back at one's life, talking about the dangers of maybe where he was heading.
Is it about healing?
Healing, absolutely. I think like one of my favorites on this one.
Yeah.
Let me see. It could have been me. Let me see.
I like that one too.
He talks about like on well, I don't want to get too far too ahead of myself, but there's a lot of looking back on this album.
Okay. Wait, how old was he when this album? How old was Ness when this album came out?
He's 61 now.
Now, okay. Oh, okay. So 30.
He was 28. When this one came out.
28. Okay. All right. Oh, okay.
Listening to his voice, you wouldn't guess that, because it's just... no one sounds like Mike Ness.
but decidedly late 20s.
Yeah. Yes.
Which seems to be a wrinkle in this one. This guy's seen some shit.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What did you think of Social Distortion self-titled?
I liked it. I didn't know what... quite to think of it, because it is such a weird mishmash of country and punk and there's like all of a sudden it's like some harmonicas and all this. I immediately thought of like all those songs that are in like the beginning of Kevin Smith movies, you know, like that I don't know too well. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
All right. Very, you know, certainly country, but like also like Irish and Scottish, like storytelling vibes to it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And even like I was just like one of the songs I don't even know, but like I was just like, sounds like a, this could be a Monkees tune if the Monkees did heroin. Like, like I'm a believer, but like if with a little more grime on it would be like one of these tunes. I dug it. I was very curious about it. I don't know. That Ring of Fire cover is pretty far out, man.
I'm so happy we were able to incorporate Johnny back into the show any way we can.
You are curating well, my man. Listeners, look back to the Johnny Cash episode when I lost my shit about Johnny Cash, and the daunting task of diving into his discography. But like, here's a Ring of Fire cover, and it's fucking cool, man. I'm sure there's a lot of Ring of Fire covers out there, but this one's pretty of note, I would imagine.
Absolutely. So, as like I said, I love Soulshine. I actually saw them play this album on the 25th anniversary.
Oof.
It was.
Did you get punched in the head?
I punched someone in the head. It was.
Whoa, Jacob!
I'm just kidding. I'm very nonviolent. But it's Social D. No. It was awesome. So, like, what they did was they lowered down a tarp of the album artwork, which is fantastic, by the way. They started playing the Rolling Stones' Gimme Shelter. Dun, 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 dun. I'm not really doing it justice. but they played this like this Rolling Stones song while the band came on stage, and they lit the album artwork up in blue, and it was beautiful. And the lights went out when they did it. And they crushed it. I'd only seen them once before at ACL. But they play this album front to back, which I address probably one of my favorite punk rock albums.
Is that right?
I would say probably top 10 for sure. Maybe even top 5.
Tell me what they're all about. What's Social Distortion's deal? Well, what attracts you to the music? Is it just like the killer licks, the cool panned guitars and all that, that start every song? That's fun.
I think it's the country. In all honesty,
it's the country and the harmonica solos. It's so like gently country tinged. It's like it's like paprika on your hummus.
Yeah.
Like it's there. You would miss it if it wasn't there, but you could like you just know it's there. It's like, but it's not like overpowering. It's very interesting.
That's very well put. I think what I love about it is because you like. You look at the guys, you know, and they look like rockabilly, you know, rockabilly punk rockers. But then they play
Jake is holding up his record collection of all these things. They're all leathered up.
Yeah, you know, like
he kissed it.
So, you know, Mike Ness.
I didn't kiss my Bjork vinyl because it's upstairs right now. Adam borrowed it.
Mike Ness, you know, he's got that. Well, during this one, he's got that great pompadour. You know, he's like, he wears like, you know, the white tank tops with like baggy, like 1950s, like zoot suit pants almost. You know, you've seen these pictures of him.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got this like image of being this like, you know, this rockabilly guy, but then he writes these like great, you know, country tinged songs that aren't fast for being a punk band. They're not really fast. They're not Ramones, you know, they're not a band like that.
Yeah.
Like NoFX or the Vandals. Like
they're not thrashing.
No, not exactly. You know, and the licks are so tasty, and yes, there's totally a harmonica solo in this
I record. Dug the harmonica on a few songs too, right? Jake, can I ask a question?
What's up?
What is rockabilly?
Rockabilly? That's a great question. Rockabilly is...
I thought so, too.
It's an early form of rock and roll.
Okay.
It's a little... So, rockabilly, think like... Carl Perkins, Blue Suede Shoes, A lot of Johnny Cash's early stuff was rockabilly. It's a country-tinged rock and roll.
Okay.
Like, country songwriting sensibilities with, like, a driving rock and roll rhythm with, like, blues guitar licks thrown in there. Social Distortion could be argued as a cowpunk band, which was...
But they're so not the, Blink sort of thing, right? Yeah.
Well, they're they could probably... Like cowpunk, probably like the Cramps. Did you ever listen to the Cramps? Another Los Angeles, like country tinged punk rock. It was this genre of music popular in like the early 80s, where it was like these like punk bands that incorporated country music. Buck Owens, he was like a really early country rock guy. Even Dwight Yoakam used to play shows with LA hardcore and punk bands. There are these like great stories of him like playing with like X, which is one of the great California punk bands. So California's really always had this like kind of like country meets punk thing going for it. Country music used to be referred to as hillbilly music.
So
they take that billy, rock and roll,
rockabilly. I wrote down, I think you might like this.
What's that?
If you don't, but like listening to this album, I was like, how about calling it Punky Tonk?
Oh my God. That's the episode title. That's so good.
Thank you. Good night. Thanks for listening to Sipping Mimosa.
Good night. This is the last episode. We can't, we're not topping that.
Punky Tonk, bro?
That's so good. Punky Tonk.
Not bad, right?
Oh.
How did the Western influence get to Cali? Fucking gold, people moving west and all this? Like, is it more in the culture than we think it is?
Absolutely. So like I mentioned Buck Owens. Buck Owens is actually from Bakersfield, California. So he's a California guy. I mean, Merle Haggard is also a California guy.
Californians.
The Californians. So in the 60s, you had these songwriters like Roger McGuinn, I apologize, it's one of them, from the Byrds, who was really into like folk music, and country. These guys that came from country backgrounds, that played in Kentucky and Tennessee, but came out to California.
Yeah.
Another great example is Gram Parsons. He was a guy who was obsessed with Elvis and George Jones, one of the great country singers of the 20th century. And he brought his record collection out to California and started introducing all these like rock and rollers, these like, psychedelic rockers to country music, and it's always been there, and I think it's really cool how, because you think California, you think like, especially like in the 60s, 70s, you think like the Beach Boys, you think of like the Hate sound, the Hate in San Francisco, like Janis Joplin, Grateful Dead, But like embedded in all that were a bunch of like diehard country fans that kept that genre alive on the West Coast. And it's really, really cool.
Wow.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, it's, you can see like the bloodstream of it all.
Absolutely.
Now, Jake, what makes country music country?
Oh man, this could be debated.
I think I'm asking you hard questions tonight. I'm sorry.
No, I love it. I love it. Keeps me sharp. I think if country music, there's a great quote. I think Willie Nelson said it. It's country chords is country music is three chords and the truth.
Whoa. Yeah. Oh, I love that. Why do I love that so much?
Because that's the best way to describe it.
But punk is very minimal chords too, right?
See, and...
And so it goes.
I've always felt that there was this like... this parallel between country music and punk rock.
Wow.
One of my friends actually from school, Dr. Jennifer Ruck, actually wrote her doctorate thesis on the subject.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's really cool that, you know, it's shout out Dr. Ruck. So it's really cool that, you know, that marriage of country and punk, that even you, you know, you kind of picked up on that, like the minimalist of punk, you know, and it just they're so intertwined, you know, they're, I don't know, it's hard to describe, but they're so, I don't know. I think Hank Williams is super punk rock. Absolutely. Like kicking out the light bulbs at the Ryman, you know? I mean, That's something Johnny Rotten would have done, you know?
Is this whole podcast like about warm weather versus cold weather? Like, am I a cold weather guy and you're warm weather? Because like...
Well, you are from Michigan.
I'm a bit from Michigan, yeah. but like...
In a like, literal sense.
Well, yeah, I'm literally... I
no,
live
like,
there
like literally cold. It's literally cold in Michigan.
Oh, it is quite cold there, yes.
Yeah.
But like, I think I'm always so fascinated about like how like the temperatures and climates and like seasons and like living conditions affect the musicians that come out of these cultures. And it seems to me all my guys are cold. They all come from cold places.
Yeah.
And a lot of your guys are the California dudes and like the Southern dudes, with the only exception of Smashing Pumpkins, which find themselves kind of in a weird middle.
Yeah.
Cause they're Chicago, right?
Yeah. Which they should be Seattle. You know,
They're absolutely a Seattle band, but like they're in Chicago for some reason. But Chicago is basically Seattle for 9 months out of the year, only frozen the fuck over. So like they have a different like take. I don't know. I want to draw like a diagram about how weather and climate like affects what the artist's output is. I think it'll be an interesting comparison.
I mean, you think about like Norwegian death metal. You know, this. I think the word is this just, you know, droning, dark, you know, scary at times. And you think, like, what's the weather in Norway? You know, it's like, it's cold all the time. You know, these guys, you know, it's gray. So, I mean, I absolutely think that weather and environment affects the, you know, musical output of an artist for sure. Well, I think one of the best examples on the rock side is Alice in Chains, you know, like,
yeah,
Seattle. That's I mean, we did a Pantera and a Korn album on this show, but I still think Dirt is probably the heaviest we've gone for the show.
Heaviest as in heavy what?
Like just all around sledgehammer, you know, like heavy.
Like this is deep and sad.
Yeah, deep, sad. Crunching guitars, which also, which I thought was really neat. The guy that produced Soul to Distortion also produced Dirt.
How about that?
Love it.
The production was great. I did enjoy the album. I'm going to return to it. I liked the panning. The seemingly minimal production and all this was cool. And like a refresher after listening to a lot of Bjork, where it's like, so precise and like so produced, but not to say that that's like overproduced, but it was nice to hear like a grungy kind of, but like grungy but specific album, you know.
I feel like listening to this record, this record has like room to breathe. Does that make sense? Like it's very like,
I like that. Yeah,
it's not, I don't think it's compressed very, at, you know, at all, but neither is Dirt. You know, the guy's name is Dave Jordan.
The producer?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Listening to Dirt, listening to this, I'm like, I can hear similarities. Like, it's like the guitars feel like they have like room to like expand and just kind of
You could play it in a bedroom, you could play it in a warehouse, and it would still sound pretty cool.
I'm just saying, if you're out like at a bar, you throw on Story of My Life or Ball and Chain.
Yeah.
Instant sing along. Oh yeah.
Wow, okay. I didn't know how many of my friends like knew this shit. Like I didn't even ask my mom, like, do you know about Social Distortion? She's like, yeah, I know that band. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah, so could not recommend, you know, Social Distortion's albums that came after this. I couldn't recommend them more. My personal faves are White Light, White Heat, White Trash, Sex, Love, and Rock and Roll, and their latest album, which came out in 2011, which is, as of today, 12 years ago now, Hard Times and Nursery Rhymes. That album is fantastic, especially the song Machine Gun Blues. If you enjoyed Social Distortion, definitely check them out. I think they're on tour right now. It's we're recording this in early May 2023. So check them out if they're coming to your town. I promise you will not regret it. But I'm happy you like Social D. Check them out. God. Like I said, they're a lot of fun. Their songs are sad, but they do it in a way that will have you banging your head. So
yeah.
All right. So next time, I think we're going to do something a little special. We had such a blast talking about
Björk.
We had such a blast talking about
Björk.
Jimmy World and Royksopped last week.
Last
episode. We thought it would be fun, kind of like, you know, kicking off the summer, because we're recording this, like I said, in early May 2023. So we thought we'd maybe do another time jump and see what 2002 has to offer.
Yeah, let's go ahead. Yeah, let's go back back to the future and go to 2002. Jake, what do you any albums of note in 2002?
This is actually around the time when I really started to become a music nerd. You know, I really started, you know, reading the album liners and really taking note from the days of, you know, listening to Korn self-titled and being like, oh, this sounds awesome, to wow, this makes me feel some type of way. This makes me, what is this? You know, I was maturing. I was getting hair in really weird places, you know. And so I looked at 2002. I was curious. And an album came out by a Canadian singer-songwriter. I'm so excited and grateful for the chance to talk about their album next time. So, Elliot, for our summer kickoff episode,
okay,
I present to you Avril Lavigne's Let Go.
One question.
Hit me.
Is Skater Boy on this one?
This is the Skater Boy one.
I'm jazzed as all hell.
This one is, it's got Complicated. It's got I'm With You. There's some heat on this album.
And this qualifies as radio rock for you?
Oh, yeah. This is the album where Avril I don't think she knew she was doing it, but this is the album where Avril kind of came like the queen of pop punk. I'm so excited to dive in. Did you hang out with Avril Lavigne in the city that you used to live in?
No.
Are you playing drums on this record?
Yeah, I made her eggs in the morning. That seems to be my go-to bit. Okay, since we're going to the year 2002.
Nice.
Thank you. I thought so. I thought it might be a nice time to revisit a friend of ours, and one that I think maybe you need to have a little revisit to, because he's one of my absolute favorites of all time, and he put out an album called The Private Press in 2002, and it's an artist by the name of DJ Shadow.
Oh! DJ Shadow, man, this is one that I've grown more and more of an appreciation for since we recorded. Very excited to dive back in.
So we talked at length about introducing in 96, I believe it was. It took him this long, until 2002, to put out The Private Press, his follow-up. And I think it is quite of note. I think it's astonishing. And I'm also going to send you some live footage, because I think his live shows are pretty far out. And we can talk about that too.
All right. So be sure to come back next time and hear us talk about Avril Lavigne's Let Go and DJ Shadow's Private Press, both from the glorious year of 2002. 2002, in my opinion, controversial opinion, has the, you know, on New Year's Eve when people get like the glasses, like the sunglasses of like the year,
it says like 2000. Sure, sure, sure.
2002, yeah. The best version of those glasses.
Best glasses.
You know.
Okay.
That's just how I feel. I mean,
the most aesthetically pleasing?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, until 2003.
Oh, yeah.
those are true. Those are probably like okay, too, right?
I can't wait.
It's going to be a good year, man.
But with that, thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of Sippin' Mimos. Check out Bjork and Social Distortion. Promise you will not regret it. Be sure to like and subscribe to Sippin' Mimos.
Find us on Instagram. Hit us up on Gmail, sippinmimospod@gmail.com. Send us questions or whatever. We'll answer them on the show. It'd be fun.
Yeah, we've been getting a lot of new listeners, so welcome. If you're stumbling on the show for the first time, welcome. Thank you for listening and giving our crazy show an hour or so of your time. We're honored.
Thank you so much for joining me tonight, and to the listeners,
hey,
stay sipping.
Clink
clink. That was in perfect unison.